Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everybody. So great to be back this week. Hope everybody's doing good. Hope everybody had a good week. Sorry for being a couple minutes late. Got caught up in some different phone calls and had to get on. So I'm here. We're ready to go. Hopefully we got another action-packed call this week. And hopefully I can bring some value to your life. And that's what I'm here for. That's what the goal is. And also to fulfill my dream and my legacy of being able to reach out and give information and study and work to understand how this body works and how this world works. So I'm committed to that. I enjoy that. And it's one of the biggest things that I've been able to do thus far in life. That's very, very gratifying for me. Trying to get some notes together. Okay. Now, so one of the big things about what we're doing this week is I had several different conversations over the last week or so about digestive disorders and digestive issues. And so, you know, one of the big things that always comes up is acid reflux or GERD, high blood pressure and salt. Those are some of the things that come up in these conversations. And so, you know, high blood pressure, one, is something that the medical system has taken and kind of ran with. And basically, they're attributing high blood pressure to salt. So now people stay away from salt. Stay away from salt, then you're inhibiting your digestion. Salt is extremely important in your digestion. And then if you're not digesting your food, then it's kind of just sitting there in your stomach. And so the doctors have decided to say that, well, you got too much acid, which is absolutely not the truth. So when we talk about digestive disorders and we talk about these things and how they work together, there is a sense that when we, and this is why I group them this way, because if you are dealing with one, you're likely dealing with all four in some way, shape, or form. And so for me, it's much easier to deal with it from this aspect instead of just trying to deal with them one at a time, because you're going to end up spilling over. If you're going to tell the whole story, you end up spilling over into the other one. And so, I have to get my charger for a second to my other computer. It's about to die on me. So when we talk about digestive disorders, and that's why I call it digestive disorders, but really we're talking about why our bodies don't necessarily digest food in the manner that it should, and also the foods that we have to choose from aren't really conducive to digestion either. And so when we talk about digestion, that starts in the mouth, of course. And so you chewing up your food, you have saliva, which should have some level of acid in it. And the great thing about your body is it's really smart. And so what it'll do is you have salivary glands, and in those glands, of course, you excrete saliva. But what is saliva? And saliva is a mix of fluid, almost like a gel-type fluid, but it also has different types of acids in it that help with the breakdown of the food to the point where you can swallow it. And so different foods require different acids. Now, one thing that I used to chew gum a lot growing up, And one of the things that I learned, which I thought was funny, chewing gum is really not that great for you. You know, they have different types of gum and those kinds of things. But I really wanted to know why, because I had heard it on, I heard it in a lecture. And so when I went back and looked at it, our mouths and our glands, again, like I said, make certain acids and make certain types of fluids to break down certain foods. And most of the gum you chew that's over-the-counter, well, not really over-the-counter, but all gum is over-the-counter, excuse me, but just your regular run-of-the-mill big brain type gum like your Wrigley's and Spearmint and Double Mint and Juicy Fruit and Bubble Yum and all of these gum, all of those different types of gum, they have a little bit of rubber sometimes in it, whatever they're using to hold it together so you can continuously chew it. What happens is, because it's a foreign body substance, meaning that the body does not recognize that gum. Now, they make, like I said, healthy gum, which is fine, but the problem when you chew healthy gum, you might get it from Whole Foods, you might get it from Trader Joe's. But when you chew that gum, I mean, it breaks down so fast. Like, it gets real thin in your mouth, and you can almost just swallow it. But that's because it's natural gum. But when you drink it, when you eating some of the, when you chewing some of the gum, like your from your, like I said, your major brand gum, your Double Mint, Spearmints, and Ice, Icebreakers, and not what well, that's Breath Mints, but Trident was the one I'm thinking about, or any of them for any matter, that are just kind of right at the grocery store where you get it right as you're leaving out. They have rubber in it. They have a lot of toxins in it. Sometimes they have epoxy in it. So what happens is when you chew this gum, the body says, okay, I normally chew food so I can swallow it, which means I have to create a certain amount of saliva and a certain amount of a certain amount of bacteria, a certain amount of acid to be able to break this food down. So when I pop a piece of gum in my mouth, my body's saying, okay, this rubber, this stuff, I don't really recognize this. So I need to chew it, but as I'm chewing it, I'm going to create different types of acids and bacteria and toxins to break this gum down. Well, what the body ends up doing is it ends up creating this saliva that can break down rubber. The problem is when that's reacting together, it's causing toxins within the body. So we're chewing this gum, chewing this gum, chewing this gum. And if you ever chew a piece of gum for a long time, it breaks down. It's almost nothing there. Or it gets really hard. And so that's the body's saliva. That's the body's working mechanisms to say, you know what, either I'm going to have to chew this gum, and depending on the type of gum and what chemicals are in it, it's either going to get really hard, like your Bubble Yums and your big, those big square pieces of gum. They get really hard, and if you chew past that or you drink something, it gets harder, and it just gets unattractive. Like, you're just like, I can't chew this anymore, and you spit it out. And the flavor is gone. And then some of the other ones, like the Double Mint, the Trident, those, you chew them, and based on some of the toxins and things that are in them and the rubbers, the body will break it down, and it almost break it down so thin that it's not even worth having in your mouth anymore. And so in doing that, the body's creating a particular type of toxin that's harmful to our bodies. And when you do that, now you are adding that toxin to your digestive system because nothing ever goes down. And so now you're sending this toxic saliva down your hatch, and it hits your stomach, and it reacts with your stomach. And so what that's doing is it's altering the pH in your stomach. And I'm like, man, you know, that's a long dissertation on what happens when you chew gum. But a lot of times we just do things and we don't really know why. You know, you put a piece of gum in your mouth and you don't really know why. I mean, you know that you want to chew it, but you don't really think about what's actually happening. Or you think maybe it's halfway healthy if I just chew this gum and, you know, maybe I get some benefit out of it. Maybe it just, you know, keep me awake or whatever, freshen my breath, whatever the reason is you're chewing it. But that's just how amazing our bodies are, that it'll take something as toxic as a piece of gum and break it down. And so no matter what you put in your body will figure out what to do with it. even if it just stores it somewhere. And that's what happens a lot of times when we talk about digestion and the issues that we have digesting food, because a lot of the foods that we have aren't really conducive to our digestive system, our bodies even in general, because a lot of the food, especially processed foods and the American diet, generally speaking, is not conducive to bodies. And so our bodies get a whole lot of stuff in it that it doesn't know what to do with. High fructose corn syrup. I mean, you look at the back of cereal boxes, you look at back of juices, you look at canned fruit, anything, not anything, but most things you look at are laden with high fructose corn syrup. High fructose corn syrup is something that the body does have no clue what to do with. It's a sugary syrup, and it's genetically modified, and it's used to stretch certain products out so that they last longer, or they preserve them longer, or they give it a better taste, whatever the case may be. And it's high fructose corn syrup the body doesn't know what to do with. And so it'll take it and it'll store it in the gut. It'll take it and send it to the thyroid. And so a lot of the things that we eat that are not on our traditional diet, body diet, meaning what we should eat to live, not live to eat, those particular things get into our bodies and it causes us to be ill. And it may not be such that you realize it, because if you're an active person or if you tend to do pretty good most of the time with your eating, or if you've just been so used to eating the same things for so long and you're taste conscious, that's what we call that when you crave a taste. You're not eating because you're hungry. You're not eating because it's a certain food. You crave a taste of a food. And when you crave a taste of a food, that's when you become what we call food blind, where you don't really care that this particular food is not good for you. You just want the taste of that particular food. And in that scenario, that's when you're pretty much kind of far gone. And so your body makes adjustments, and your body will adjust itself and say, okay, I need that ice cream, or I need that Cinnabon, or I need that bacon, egg, and cheese, or whatever it is that you're getting that's not healthy for you, and you're getting it, and you're eating it, and you think you feel good because you ate it. That's your craving mechanism. That's a chemical mechanism. That's like a drug. When you are addicted to a particular drug or a particular thing, whether it be sex, whether it be a drug, whether it be alcohol, that's a chemical change. And so your body recognizes that as a chemical change and says, I need this particular thing, and it has to be this particular way, else I'm not going to be satisfied. And that's just like you ever have a craving for a Sub, but then you get to where the Sub place is and it's closed. So then you might go to Subway, or you might get a hot dog, or you might get something else, but you still have that taste in your mouth for what you want. That's when, you know, you tend to be food blind, especially with some of your bad foods. So what happens is now we chew this food and it hits our stomach finally. And our pH, the pH in your stomach should be about a pH of 1. That's biochemistry, that's science. And so when you look it up, if you look up what should stomach acid be, because I always encourage you to do your own research, but you say, what should stomach acid be? Stomach acid has the lowest pH at any part of the body. When we talk about pH, like women having pH in their vaginal area, you want that to be balanced. When you talk about the pH in our bodies, you want that to be balanced, or somewhere near more alkaline than balance. You want a little bit more alkalinity, because cells, bad cells, cancer cells, those type of cells don't thrive in an alkaline state. They thrive in an acidic state. So you want to be a little bit higher than acidic. I mean, a little bit higher than balanced. Balance is right in the middle, 7, 7.4 or something. You want to be a little bit higher than balanced. So, and if you're dealing with some issues, and you decide that if you have an alkaline machine, or you want to drink alkaline water, you know, you can get up around 7.88, you know, add more alkalinity. The problem with alkaline waters and carbonated drinks and those things when you're eating is because that neutralizes your stomach acid. I said stomach acid should be a pH of 1. So you want to stay away from those alkaline drinks, carbonated drinks, whether it be sodas or anything with carbonation in it, because it neutralizes your stomach acid. When you neutralize your stomach acid, now you don't have the acid in the stomach that's needed to break down your food. Because remember I said the pH should be 1. And you're going to hear me say that a lot. And the reason why, or less, but the reason why it should be around that is because you have to break down your food into the smallest of chains. So if you eat an apple, you want to break that apple down to the point where you're getting the amino acids from that apple, you're getting the vitamins from that apple, you're getting whatever minerals might be in that apple. That's what happens in this. That food is broken down into nutrition and into waste. And what happens is from your stomach goes to the food goes from your stomach to your small intestine. In your small intestines, you have these little finger-like villi in your small intestine. And as food flows over those villi, it pulls down nutrients, and those little nutrient particles, whether it be amino acids, whether it be fatty acids, whatever it might be, it pulls those down into the bloodstream. If this is the bloodstream, and these are those little fingers, it pulls those nutrients down into the bloodstream. So now just imagine if you don't have enough stomach acid to break your food down into those little particles, same thing happens when you eat gluten, bread, wheat, barley, rye, and oats. When you eat those things, they don't break down. And so what they instead of breaking down into little small particles that just kind of float across, they're like these big carbon chains that just go and tumble through the stomach, and they damage the small intestines, and they damage these villi. And when you damage those villi, now you're taking away the body's ability to be able to pull food down or nutrients down into the bloodstream. And when you do that for a long period of time, you become nutrient deficient, or you become starved of nutrients. And when you get starved of nutrients and your body starts, that's when your body goes into craving mode, because your body's saying, hey, I need my essential fats. I need my omega-3s, 6s, and 9s. Well, your body can't tell you that. It can't tell you that specifically. So what it says is, I crave fried food because I'm looking for oil. So because what we have to choose from in the American diet, you want the French fries. You want the chicken fingers. You want the fried chicken. You want the fried fish. You want those particular things because your body's not getting enough of its omegas. If you say, you know what, I need sugar. I need a candy bar. I need something sweet. That's your blood sugar. Your body's not able to get the proper ratios of the chromium and vanadium that it needs, because as a deficiency, chromium and vanadium, and there are about 23 other cofactors, that's what regulates your blood sugar. And so you can't just, when your blood sugar's off, it's not that you need sugar, it's that your body's looking for that chromium and vanadium and those other 23 groups of minerals and cofactors that go along with that to help it get into your body. And that's why we have such great success with people who have blood sugar imbalances, specifically speaking, type 2 diabetes, which is really easy to help the body rid it of itself. Because really it's not a problem with insulin or you absorbing insulin. That's the problem is you not absorbing insulin. You're making insulin just fine, but the insulin is not getting in the cell receptors. The cell receptors are not opening and closing to take in the insulin. The reason why they don't open and close is because they don't have the raw materials to make them open and close, which is your chromium and vanadium and those other 23 cofactors. So that's like your garage door. Your garage door doesn't have the battery in the opener. You keep pushing the opener, nothing happens. You run your car through the garage, it won't open, but you're going to damage it, but you're going to get in the garage. Same thing what happens with type 2 diabetes. Those cell receptors are not opening and closing to take in the insulin. So the insulin is just piled out front trying to get in. You have issues. It's not getting into the cell. you go to the doctor or you have certain symptoms that mimic or say that you have pre-diabetes or type 2 diabetes, and the first thing you do when you go to the doctor is they give you insulin, which is absolutely the wrong thing to do when you have type 2 diabetes. And so now you got your insulin, and then you got their insulin, and you just keep banging on that door, and finally it busts and opens, and you break a door down, you damage everything around it. The frame, the door, same thing happens with the cells. You damage that cell dies. And that's why when you look at people who have type 2 diabetes and have had it for a long time and injecting insulin and suffering from it, they have issues with joints or issues with limbs. They have eye issues because they have a lot of dead cells in one place. And when you have a lot of dead cells in one place, that part of the body dies. That's why it's not uncommon for people who are type 2 diabetic for long periods of time to have limbs and different things amputated because they have so many dead cells. Also, you'll find that their cholesterol is higher because cholesterol does two things. Cholesterol makes cells, and cholesterol makes hormones. That's all cholesterol does. And so the more damaged cells you have, the more cholesterol you need, or the more cholesterol your body creates, which will drive up your cholesterol really, really high and cause problems. And then you're dealing with circulation issues and all of that. So, you know, that is kind of the meat of what happens when your body's craving sugar or craving things. You have a blood sugar imbalance. And so that's because whatever foods you're eating that you would probably normally get chromium and vanadium and some of those cofactors from, because you can't absorb it in the small intestines, you're having problems. So that's why the digestive system is very important. Now, when we keep that pH at about 1, that food goes down and that good food goes down and we're able to digest it and break it down. And if you're eating foods that don't have any nutrients in it, that's empty, then it doesn't know what to do with it. So it passes through the body, and it could come out in the form of diarrhea. It could turn into constipation. It could turn into where it just sits in your colon, because it's really undigested food, because your body just says, I got this. There's nothing for it to break down. We can send it all out as waste, and that backs up your waistline, pun intended. Your waistline, your stomach, where you gain a gut, or your waistline is in your septic, your bowel line. And so, you know, constipation and all of those things start to ensue. And so one of the big things about digestion is salt. When we restrict salt from our diet, that prevents the body from making good, healthy stomach acid. So then, now instead of us having this pH of 1 in our stomach, the pH is about 3, 4, 5. That's too alkaline. It doesn't break anything down. So you eat food, and what it does is it just sits there. And if you take rotten, you take food and you just leave it on the counter, or you put it in a plastic bag and tie it up tight, over time, that food is just going to sit in there and it's going to ferment. It's going to rot. It's going to just turn into maggots. It's just going to break down. And it stinks. And so that's what happens in your stomach. The very little stomach acid you have is so weak that you can't digest it. You can't break down the food. You add other foods on top of it, and it just bubbles, and it bubbles up, and that's when you get heartburn, or it bubbles up, and you get that acid reflux. And if you get it worse, then you get GERD. And the first thing you do is you go to your doctor and you explain this to him. He says, oh, you have acid reflux. You have too much acid, which is an absolute lie. You don't have enough acid. That is the God to honest truth. All these years we've been told that acid reflux comes from too much acid. We do not have enough. Flat out. I can't make it no more plain than that. And they'll put you on a drug to turn off the production of any more stomach acid. It turns off your proton pumps. It stops the chief cells in your stomach from working, in your gut. Salt actually is needed in the body because that's what feeds those chief cells and helps create that stomach acid. So not only are we restricting salt because of the high blood pressure, which we'll get to, but we're also eating, drinking, carbonated drinks. We're also ignoring the gut health. And so people say, oh, go take a probiotic and that'll help. That helps with stomach cultures. Very true. Pre and probiotics, they help in the stomach. They help build good stomach culture. That's what the term you hear, culture bifidus regulitis. That's the term you hear when you talk about probiotics. But you still need the stomach acid to make those things work. So a lot of times people say, well, I take a probiotic. Well, I've been taking prebiotics, and then you're not really getting a benefit, or you don't even really know what benefits you're supposed to get. And so without that stomach acid, most things you put down will not break down. And if they don't break down, then that means you're not going to be able to absorb them when they get to the small intestine. And so then the small intestines is just, it's collateral damage. It bears the brunt of whatever the stomach didn't do. And so to restrict, to take those drugs over a period of time, Nexium, Prilosex, and all of these different types of gastro drugs, whether they be prescribed or over-the-counter, that then the side effect to that is it causes your bones to become brittle and weak. Why? Because when you eat things that have calcium in it, your body's not absorbing it because you don't have the stomach acid to break it down. Plus the side effect of the toxins to those drugs that gets in your joint, it bothers your joints. It can cause heart issues. And so people who are on, and even they came out about, I want to say a year and a half ago, maybe 2 years now, and you can look it up, especially if you're suffering from acid reflux or anything and, you're on those drugs, you can look it up. And it was a whole article, everything that came out that says that those particular drugs were not meant to be used for long periods of time. And it's been people that's been on them 10, 15 years. And it's not supposed to have been used even that long. A few months here or there just to give the body a rest, give the stomach a rest, let it rejuvenate itself, that type of thing. And so if you're suffering from that and you've been suffering from acid reflux, and I'm going to talk to you about a couple of different ways of how to let it happen naturally. But one of the big things is to find that article, because somehow your doctor still thinks it's cute that you're still on it, or doesn't see, or he's just enjoying the money that he's getting from you coming back to having to refill that prescription every year or every month or whatever the case may be. But find that article, and just even if you got to Google it, why are digestive drugs bad for you, or why are acid reflux drugs bad for you, or are acid reflux drugs bad for you? And Google it, and that article will come up, and it'll say that, you know, these things weren't meant to be taken for long periods of time. So once you rid your body of that, then now we can start to roll things back in. But one of the things that you have to do is take in salt. Now, is all salt created equal? Absolutely not. All salt is not created equal. So when you go buy table salt actually has little tiny shards of glass. You know, you think salt is produced from the ocean. Table salt is man-made salt. It's a conglomeration of different things, silica, sand, these little shards of glass. If you ever took sand in your hand on the beach and you looked at it, you'll actually see the little shiny little looking pieces of glass and sand. That's what man-made salt, our table salt, is made up of. So when you ingest that salt, those little shards, as you're digesting them, they put little scratches down your esophagus, in through your digestive system, in through your bloodstream. And what happens is it causes little scratches. And when you have those little scratches, those are cells. Everything in your body is a cell. It's made up of a cell. You'll have cholesterol. Because cholesterol, all it does is make cells and it makes hormones. Cholesterol is going to that area to try to repair that area. And the more you continue to send damage, and the more damaged cells you get, and the more bad stuff you keep sending to those particular areas, then that becomes plaque. Not cholesterol. The arteries get plaque in them from what the body's trying to do to combat scar tissue. you ever get scar tissue on the outside of your body, it's really hard. Well, because you got that mixed with cholesterol, it turns really hard because we're trying to protect this area so nothing gets to it. Well, in the event of doing that, now in a hole that's this big, you've blocked off and, you know, made probably half its size. So where you would have blood flow and all of that flowing through a hole, it's now cut off because you got cholesterol in there trying to work. You got the plaque building up. And so now that artery is much smaller. So what kind of salt should we use? We should use good sea salt. Also, what I love, and I salt my food to impunity, and I do not have high blood pressure, but I use Himalayan sea salt. And a lot of times in the summertime, I sweat. And when you sweat, you need to put a little bit of salt in your water. Not so it's salty, but just a little bit of salt, and I have it in a grinder, so I just grind a couple little turns of salt in my water and shake it up. Saline, so to speak. When you go to the hospital because you dehydrated, or somebody fall out because they have a heat stroke in the summertime, or if you overheat and they take you to the hospital, first thing they do is give you an IV. What's an IV? Saline, salt water. So everybody who's ever in the hospital for more than a couple of days or so, and they're on IVs, all these people coming out of surgery and all this stuff, and they just on saline, that's the only thing that they're getting is keeping them alive. But yet and still, they've tricked you and told you that salt is bad for you. Salt will hydrate your body. Salt will keep you hydrated, mixed with water. So everybody in the hospital that's in the ICU, been in ICU, or life support, and all they getting is saline, all of them should have high blood pressure. Next time you go to the hospital, and I don't mean this in a bad way. I mean it's just in the way of understanding. If you work in a hospital, or God forbid somebody in your family's in the hospital, and ask the doctor, say, are you giving them saline? And they say, yeah. Well, isn't that going to give them high blood pressure? Because doesn't salt cause high blood pressure? And make them watch their face and let them try, make them try to explain that to you. You want to get on their bad side? and I shouldn't say that because then you think, oh, if I get on their bad side, they're going to do something to my loved one. But no, make a point to ask that question and see if salt is that bad for you, why are you giving it to people day in and day out? Salt is needed. Regardless of your religious background, even they talk about it in the Bible. Go forth and be the salt of the earth. Somebody will say these are salt of the earth type people, meaning they're great people. Salt is good for you. In a pasture, in a farm, on a farm, a farmer will put out a salt block for his livestock, and he don't go around telling them how much salt they can lick off of the thing. They lick as much as they want. So, you know, we can salt our food to taste and be okay. Your food does not have to be salty, but at the same time, you should not be restricting good salt. And you can look up Himalayan sea salt if you're not familiar with it. It's pink. And you will replace that very fast with the table salt you have in your home. You can get Himalayan sea salt pretty much anywhere. Just make sure that when you read ingredients, it has exactly what it says in there. It don't need a whole lot of extra stuff with it. It don't have no fillers, no binders. Himalayan sea salt is salt from the Himalayas. It's just that plain. And so Himalayan sea salt also has a lot of benefits. A lot of benefit. So look that up and then make the change from table salt to Himalayan salt and salt your food. Do not be afraid to salt your food. So many people say, well, I don't put salt on my food. And if you think you're talking to the right person, some people say, well, that's a good thing. Man, I wish I could not salt my food. I love salt. Just make sure you're using the right salt. So sea salt, Himalayan salt, you can use kelp. I mean, there's a lot of different things you can use that are salty from the ocean besides table salt. Table salt is man-made salt. Just like sugar. Sure, you ask somebody what color sugar is, and they'll say white. Sugar cane is brown all day long. You ask somebody what color vanilla is, they'll say white. Vanilla bean, which where you get vanilla from, is brown all day long. So the system has done a good job in tricking us to make us think that things are what they are, and they're really not. And they put it right in our face. It's right there. Our raw sugar is brown. You tell somebody, go to the store and get you some sugar, they'll bring back white sugar. It's not sugar. It's man-made sugar. It's not natural sugar. So that's one of the ways that they trick us. But then when we talk about the salt thing, they say, oh, you can't eat too much salt because you won't get high blood pressure. Newsflash. High blood pressure does not have to do with too much salt. High blood pressure is a calcium, magnesium, vitamin D3 deficiency. People who are got high blood pressure, hypertension, the first thing they're told is to restrict salt. That's the worst thing you can do. So they put you on high blood pressure medication, and high blood pressure medication can regulate blood pressure, but it cannot fix the root cause of the problem where you'll ever be able to leave it alone. And I'm talking about the medication. You will be on that medication likely for the rest of your life because it does not fix the root cause. It just regulates. Just like a birth control pill will regulate your cycle, but that's not the same as your body working on its own to create that. Same thing with blood pressure. Yet pressure should be controlled by the valves in the heart, by the way the rhythm of the heart, by the way the heart beats, how wide the arteries are, the volume of blood flowing through the arteries, I mean, the speed that it goes through. That's what creates pressure. In your car, you have pressure. And if you don't have enough fluid in your car, radiator fluid, whatever, that car will heat up. And when that car heats up, that thermostat will start making that noise, and you're creating and you're raising the pressure in your car. Same thing in your body. When something is blocked and something is trying to push through, it's creating pressure. That's what raises your blood pressure. But we can give you drugs to slow your heart down. We can give you drugs to speed your heart up. That's what we're going to do to regulate blood pressure. But we're not fixing the root cause of the problem. And so, again, high blood pressure has nothing to do with too much salt. High blood pressure has to do with a deficiency in those particular minerals, calcium, vitamin D3, magnesium, glucosamine, strontium. I say all of those things because those are all the things that when we talk about calcium that you need to go along with the calcium. Just like I talk about chromium and vanadium and those other 23 cofactors, I'm not naming all of them, but they're cofactors that go along with that. When I say calcium, I'm talking about vitamin D3 and magnesium and glucosamine and chondroitin and strontium. I'm talking about all of those things. That's what bones are made up of. That's what all the moving parts in your body is made up of. Our bodies are 75% water or 70% water, 75%, 80%, whoever you ask, but it's merely mostly water and 20% solid. And if you took that 20%, 80% of that 20%, inside of that 20%, if you say that 20% is 100%, just say for instance, 80% of that is your body. That's calcium that your body needs. So everything solid in your body needs calcium. And so most of us are calcium deficient. A lot of us are vitamin D3 deficient. And the doctors are now just figuring that out. So they put you on a synthetic form of vitamin D3, which doesn't really help you. It gives you some benefit, but then the side effects to it, you know, take it away because now you're dealing with something else. And so when we talk about hypertension, we talk about high blood pressure, we're not talking about too much salt, not even close. That's just something that's been perpetrated on us for so long, and if you hear a lie long enough, it becomes the truth. And then when you finally hear the truth, you don't even believe it because you think it's a lie. Because you've been hearing the same thing for the longest time. But they've also told us that high blood pressure is hereditary, which is a lie. My mother had high blood pressure, but I don't. And that's a direct gene. Normally what we get as far as issues normally are passed down through the mother because that's where you are for 9 months. So if you are, if it was hereditary, then a mother has high blood pressure, that baby should be born with high blood pressure. It should have it right then if it's hereditary. It shouldn't be when you get 40, 50, 20, 30, oh, you have high blood pressure. Oh, yeah, that's hereditary. If it's hereditary, you should have already had it. The other thing about it is there was a big study that was done, and they took some men in Chicago, and they did a DNA test on them, and they figured out what parts of, I think it was Nigeria, Africa, that they came from. And they went back to that part of the land in Africa. They did tests on all of those people. They took a group of males and did tests on them to find out if they had high blood pressure. And what they found was 97% of those people in Africa had normal blood pressure. But all these men in the States in Chicago that they did the test on had high blood pressure. And so if it was hereditary, it should, anybody in Africa should have it. Anybody in Chicago should have it. If it's all from the same lineage, it's heredity. It's a gene that didn't have it. So that's not true. And babies don't have it. It's a learned behavior, meaning that your habits dictate your diseases. The only thing that you get that's through your DNA, you know, hair color, eye color, pigment, height, not even really weight, but you know, your ability to be a certain frame, certain size frame. I mean, we all have the same 206 bones, and they're all the same size. All of us look the same as a skeleton. If you're a bunch of women, look the same as a skeleton, and a bunch of men look the same as a skeleton. But when you talk about heredity and genes and DNA, those are the things that pass through DNA. Diseases don't pass through your DNA. So that's another lie, because they told us, okay, if something is hereditary, then we just give up. We don't even worry. We don't even bother dealing with it. Oh, that's hereditary. My grandmother had it. My mother had it. My daddy had it. I should have gotten it. You know, I have it. So it's just, it is what it is. You know, I'm going to be taking this drug for the rest of my life. My grandmother, my father's mother died from complications of type 2 diabetes. My dad doesn't have type 2 diabetes. I don't have type 2 diabetes. Now, I do have a family member, a couple family members that do have type 2 diabetes. But everybody should have it. It's not heredity. It's their habits and choice of lifestyle that have caused that. So, you know, we kind of get caught up in the terminologies of things, and we just got so used to listening to lies that they sound like the truth. And so when they tell us, oh, that's hereditary, we just believe it. Man, I got to be on this drug for the rest of my life. But when you stop and you start to, you see how many people, you know, who were type 2 diabetic and say, oh, man, I stopped eating all the bad food. You know, I started eating right, started exercising, started taking some nutrition, did a detox, whatever it might be. You'll see that they changed. I don't have it anymore. I've lost weight. All of these particular benefits, health benefits. I don't have high blood pressure anymore. One of the things that we do for people is, you know, you get all of that at one time. You can handle all of those issues at one time, but we put them on a liver detox, which I'm going through right now, 30-day liver detox. And the first day is your prep day. The second day is your bathroom day, where you're cleaning out your liver and you're cleaning out your gallbladder and all of those things. And then the rest of the time, you're eating foods, lean meats, vegetables, leafy vegetables, fruit. You're eating regular food that you should be eating ordinarily anyway. And then you, if you got to lose weight, you got, you know, certain calorie requirements you need to make. And if you want to gain weight, then you just have certain calorie requirements that you've got to make, whether you add more calories or you're taking out calories or whatever the case may be. But it's all spelled out on a 30-day calendar. And so a lot of people, you know, they come and they get a weight benefit. You know, you lose anywhere from 10 to 26 pounds on a 30-day detox. Some people lose 30 pounds in 30 days. It's not uncommon, and it's a healthy way because your body's just adjusting itself. It's just making adjustments. You're not taking anything that's going to shed your weight that's dangerous. You're just cleaning your body out and then putting back the foods that it needs, and your body will come back to balance. And then I have people who don't need to lose weight. They want to gain weight, and they take the liver detox, and then they start to gain weight because the same nutrients that you're deficient in, it causes some people to gain weight. It causes some people to lose weight. It's funny, some people who lose weight and can't gain weight, they say, man, you look malnourished. But when people are too big or overweight, they don't say, oh, man, you look malnourished. No, you're still malnourished. Nourish is nutrients, nourishment, not food, but nutrients. It's just kind of how the stigma has played itself out over the years when we talk about it that way. But you do exactly the same thing. But you give them a little bit more calories, but you're getting the nutrients into their bodies, and you're cleaning their bodies out. We've had people come off of their acid reflux medication and had digestive disorders. Why? Because we're not putting down the foods that contribute to that. We don't have the dairy. We don't have the gluten. And those are a lot of the contributing factors to a lot of the digestive disorders we have is gluten. Gluten is wheat, barley, rye, and oats. It's what's in them. And so between the gluten and the dairy, a lot of the dairy is, and I say dairy in the sense of cow's dairy, not necessarily, I'm not speaking about almond milk or rice milk or those particular things, though they're in the dairy section, but I'm talking about milk, cheese, and different things like that. That come from cows, they tend to cause problems. Now, butter, we have this talk all the time. People say, well, you say dairy, but then you use butter instead of oil. And that's very true. Because butter, it is one of the few things. Butter is made of sweet cream, salt, and milk. And butter, now, you can't just go buy any kind of butter. You want to get a good butter, organic butter. And what that butter does is butter has a nutrient in it. When you cook butter, it has an acid in it called butyric acid. And that butyric acid is extremely good to help regulate and maintain good cholesterol. But milk, when we talk about milk and cheese, is because of what they do to them. See, when we talk about things, you can drink. If you drink cow's milk straight from, if you had a good raised cow that got a cow's diet and got the proper nutrition, and you drank straight cow's milk, there's so much benefit in that milk. But the milk that we get from the store has been pasteurized and has had stuff done to it. And that's the problem where you come in with the dairy. And then a lot of people, especially I found in the African-American community, the black community, are lactose intolerant. Why? Because our bodies weren't ever made to set up for that type of milk. And in most cultures, you only drink milk until you're weaned off as a child. And then after that, you don't drink milk anymore. But the United States has got a run on that, and they have all of this milk, and it's pasteurized, and it's got a lot of stuff done to it. And that's the issue with the milk. And it causes that phlegm. It causes things to become thick and mucousy. If you eat ice cream and drink milk and those different things, you develop that saliva. And that's very detrimental to the body. And it's also detrimental to your digestive system. And so cutting those things out, we cut those things out during a detox. So basically you're detoxing yourself from your liver, but you're also cutting out gluten and you're cutting out dairy, and the body can just come back in balance because it's eating food that it can recognize. You're getting good protein, you're getting good fruits and vegetables, but then also you're taking nutrition. So you're filling up those reserves and you're getting your nutritional levels up because now you can absorb it. Your body's set up to be able to absorb the nutrition. So in all of you, when we talk about digestive disorders, or a digestive disorder, and we talk about acid reflux and GERD, we simply need to figure out a way to get off of those drugs if you're on them through your doctor. And your doctor will wean you off of those drugs. That's something that he would have to do. You can't just stop taking your high blood pressure medication, and you shouldn't just stop taking your acid reflux medication. You need to wean yourself off of it based on his care. But at the same time, when you start to implement the salt back into your diet, and when you start to cut out the bad foods, then the body will respond in kind. Also, some people say, when I eat salt, I swell up. They get edema. Their fingers get fat or their ankles get fat. And all that is high blood protein. Your blood protein level is off. And so if you eat a couple eggs, soft scrambled in butter, or soft boiled, or poached, or over medium, over easy, you'll start to get benefit, because those eggs will help with the blood protein level. And once your blood protein level is back regulated, then you can salt your food to impunity. But you do need to eat eggs without oil. Don't fry eggs in oil. That's extremely bad for you. That's a no-no. So the salt is huge, even though they tell us to stay away from it. The things they tell you to stay away from, you do just the opposite. If they tell you don't, they tell you stay away from salt, you need salt. You just need the right kind of salt. If they tell you you got too much stomach acid, best believe you don't have enough. And when you do the opposite of what they say, you'll find that you start to get better. So doctors are very useful when it comes to health. You just do the opposite. And in a lot of cases, if it's things like we're talking about, high blood pressure and digestive disorders or acid reflux and GERD and those particular things, just really challenge him, especially if it's something you've been dealing with for a really long time. And if you've been dealing with it for a really long time and you've got the same doctor you've been with him for a really long time, you need to have a good conversation with him as to how long is this supposed to take. I'm not going to be on these drugs for the rest of my life, so it's your job to help me get off of them. This is a healthcare system. The longer I'm on these drugs, the sicker I get. So if this is a healthcare system, tell me what I need to do to be healthy, not get sicker, because all these drugs have side effects, and I'm not fixing the problem. And if he can't help you with that, no matter how much you love him, it's time for a new doctor. And you keep going until you find one that's going to help you. But you're not going to get this kind of information. So one of the big things that we have to really focus on is, when we talk about digestion, is making sure that we keep that pH intact. And we do that by keeping out the alkaline foods while we eat, an hour before or 2 hours after meals. You don't want to have anything alkaline. You don't want to have anything carbonated to drink. You don't want to eat oil, because oil will cause free radical damage to your cells and damage your stomach. And I'm talking about your cooking oils. You don't want to heat oil or the oils you're heating and eating. You want to cut those out, because it causes free radicals in the oil, which then causes free radical damage to your cells. And then you want to do some level of movement. Walking is great. A 30-minute walk. You know, some people want to exercise and have strenuous exercise, and that's fine too. But a walk, if you walk consistently every day, that keeps the body moving, keeps the joints lubricated, keeps the insides lubricated. And salt your food with good Himalayan sea salt or sea salt, and that's going to help with the stomach issues. Also, detox. Do a liver detox. That's going to help. And then eating good leafy vegetables and leafy vegetables and good vegetables, Brussels sprouts and cabbage and kale. And I mean, you can go down the line. Sweet potatoes. I absolutely love sweet potatoes. And I hated them as a child growing up because I didn't like them because they had string in them. But when you grow your own, you find that there's not a lot of string when you grow them organically. So now I can tolerate them and I can eat them a lot. So just eat more good food. Cut out the bad stuff. and then get on a new good nutrition regimen, because all the food that we get, we can't get all the nutrients that we need from our food. I think we all know that by now. You can't eat enough kale, enough bunches of kale, and enough cabbage to get the vitamin K or whatever vitamin you're supposed to get from that particular vegetable. You can't eat enough of it. And at the bottom of that bag or the bottom of that salad, it don't say how many nutrients you got. You just say, oh, I ate a salad. I must got something. I've been eating salads every day. I must got some nutrition. That's not necessarily true. So that's why it's always great to be on a supplementation regimen, and so that you can ensure that you're getting the nutrients that you need, and then the food becomes value added after that. And so I know a lot of people suffer from acid reflux and GERD and high blood pressure and all of those things. And so I felt like this was an extremely important call to have, because then you don't have to suffer from those particular things. And it's just that we don't get the education on the other side of really how to deal with it or what's actually going on. And so for me, I hope that what I've discussed with you this evening about value, if you have any questions, feel free to inbox me, or you can ask them right here in the comment section, and I will answer them. And I'd rather you answer them in the comment section, ask a question in the comment section, because then other people can read it that might not have thought of it or might have thought of it but didn't type it, and we can see their answer. And if you're on the radio, if you press 1, I can ask you, and you can ask a question, and I can answer it, or at least direct you in the right area to get your question answered if I don't have the full answer. Or if you know somebody that should have heard this, or you know somebody dealing with it, I don't expect you to remember it all. And what I would expect you to do, because I'm sure we all know somebody that's suffering from these particular things, I would just ask for you to share this video when it's done. If you see it, just share it. You know, you never know what that might do for somebody that's looking and been looking for answers. And so what you do today, or what you say today, can save millions of people to tomorrow. So it's extremely important to just make sure that we're taking care of those around us and not just harboring this information for ourselves.
Hello, Donald.
How you doing?
Hello, Donald. It's Marianne from Annapolis.
How are you?
I am well. I want to thank you for this information, as usual. Very important, the information, the inspiration. I am going to share this with one of my art friends on Monday when I see her. And she might be calling if she can call on Tuesday. Her name is Jane. I also wanted to mention that Eva Jameson now has a knee that is bone on bone, so she needs some immediate advice. For myself, I wanted to ask you think of goat cheese. It's not cow, but goat.
It's a bit better. It's a bit richer. And goats tend to have their diets are a little bit different, but
it seems to be working for me. I noticed such a difference. You know, I have been checking with this book for years, just every once in a while checking it. It's the one Eat Right for Your Type. And yeah. I just ate, like everybody else, you sprinkle Parmesan cheese here and there, and you have cheddar. And then I read one time that the only cheese really for type A is goat. And all of a sudden, when I had a little goat cheese, I realized that I didn't have any kind of lump in my lower stomach. Just kind of, I didn't have that heaviness that I had with the other cheeses.
Yeah, and that's good. I mean, that's one of the things about how important the body is, and I think that's a great book, and it's called Eat Right for Your Blood Type. That kind of helps, because again, what goes into your bloodstream has to be processed within the body. And so if you are adding
exactly.
the right things,
but
the
it
right
was
things,
yes, process. And it was wonderful to get that immediate reaction from my own body.
Right.
You know, because if you make a mistake and fall off the good wagon and eat junk even for an afternoon, you feel it.
Absolutely.
You feel that lump in the gut or whatever, so you know you've eaten trash. At least I do. Not that I do it very often, but, you know, the occasional fall from grace.
Yeah, we all have.
The body tells you right away what you've done.
That's right. That's exactly right.
Well, thank you again. I don't want to take all the time.
Not
but
a problem.
I value your opinion on the goats.
Yeah. So good to hear from you.
Well, classes are over now. We're having commencement on Saturday. And I won't be busy on Tuesday night for the whole summer. So you'll hear more from me. But I won't always take up time on the call. I'll probably do a little emailing or something to you. I just don't want to take up this airtime.
Well, we definitely appreciate it, and I definitely appreciate everything that you do, and thank you so much for calling in and comment.
Thank you, Donald. God bless.
All right, good night.
Good night.
All right. Are there any other questions? Comments? Well, again, if you ever need to reach out to me, you have a family member that might be dealing with something or going through something, or you dealing with something or going through something and you want to talk about it, and we'll get you in the right direction, feel free to give me a call. Phone number is 919-599-0916. If you need a recording of the call, you can send me a text or you can call me and leave me a voicemail. If I don't pick up, and just tell me that you need a copy of the recording for the Health Talk video. And on Facebook Live, I just asked if you're on to share it. I appreciate everybody who stopped in, liked whatever the case may be. All I ask is that you share the video, you share the live, just because we never know who might need that help. So we'll be back again next week, next Tuesday at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. I appreciate it. I look forward to seeing you all again. Bring a friend, bring a family member, and just help me save some lives one person at a time, or if nothing else, educate people. Next week is this week? 10th, 11th, 12th. Mother's Day is coming up, so I don't think we'll be on before Mother's Day. So happy Mother's Day to all of the mothers that are out there, and guardians, and everybody who's playing the motherly role, if you're not a mother specifically. That's a tough task, trust me. My son's mother is always busy. And, you know, you feel like I have a son, and you feel like at a certain point in time, your son, man, he wants to hang with you, he wants to do this, he wants to do that. But a mother-son is nothing like that bond. And so they spend a lot of time together, and sometimes he wants to be with me, but he with me too long. Where's mama? Like, Jamie, I thought we was having a good time. We are. I just want to know where mama is. So that's a wonderful thing, and I never want to get in the way of that or take that away from him. And when he's ready to be daddy's boy, if that ever happens, I'll be right here with open arms. But until then, I'll do everything I need to do to just support him and be here for him and how he needs me to be here for him. So, again, happy Mother's Day to all the mothers, and hope you enjoy your day. Hope you get everything you deserve. And from me to you, happy Mother's Day. So y'all have a good night. And we'll see you next Tuesday.